Welcome to this special edition of the Swim Out Podcast with me, Mikey, and Vicky, where we celebrate the life of a young woman who had a passion for open water swimming.
Not only was she a pioneering long-distance swimmer, but also a philanthropist and role model for the women swimmers who followed her. Mikey takes up the story.
On Friday, the 7th of October, 1927, a young British woman sets out to swim across the English Channel from France to England. This is the story of Mercedes Glites, who through grit and determination swam her way into the history books. The sea was as calm as a mill pond, and a blanket of fog lay over the water. This is what she recounted to journalists at the time.
It was the first time in 8 attempts that I encountered really natural conditions. When I started, there was a calm sea, and I derived considerable help from the neap tide, which gives long periods of slack before the turn. The fog was very heavy, but worst of all was the intense cold, which the olive oil and lard composition that was plastered thickly over my costume failed to keep out. After 2 hours, I began to feel very cold, but didn't tell those on the boat as I feared they might make me come out. I gradually overcame the cold and continued to make good progress. We could not tell our exact position owing to the fog, but kept on swimming by the course, which I believe would lead me to the English coast. For the last 3 hours, I suffered great pain. My pilot, Harry Sharp, was wonderful. He could hardly see in the fog, but kept a wonderful course for me. When he shouted that he heard the Dover foghorns, I knew we were just over the Goodwin Sands. It would have helped a great deal if I could see the land in the distance, but the fog was so dense that at times I couldn't see further than 5 yards ahead. When eventually I heard a loud shout from the boat, I felt a great hope surging straight through me. I let my feet go downwards gradually, and it was land. If I had not felt so weak, I should have cried with joy.
The moment her feet touched the chalk rocks on the beach, Mercedes collapsed. Her only words were,
"Thank God I'm conscious."
She became the first British woman to swim the English Channel in a time of 15 hours and 15 minutes. You're listening to the Swim Out Podcast and the remarkable story of Mercedes Glites. She was born in Brighton in the year 1900 to German parents who were economic migrants. When the First World War broke out, she was repatriated to Germany with her mother, and her father was interned on the Isle of Man. In the spring of 1918, aged just 17, she tried to escape Germany and swim back to England. But the strong currents forced her to land on the island of Wangaroag. Her first major swim was thwarted, but undeterred, she gained employment to save money to make it back to her beloved England 3 years later. Mercedes was a sporting pioneer who had to achieve her goals entirely by her own efforts. This was a remarkable achievement for a young woman living on her own in London at the turn of the last century. Despite the birth of the suffrage movement, the fight for the vote and women's emancipation, life was in no way easy for women. She had to take on 2 jobs in order to fund her swimming passion. When she was asked by the Australian newspaper about her choice of career, she replied,
"I love swimming. I couldn't give it up. I fight the currents, the roughness of the sea and the cold, and just cover the distance with no attempt at lowering speed records. If it's a rough sea and you're a good swimmer, you can adapt yourself to it and be just as comfortable as if you're swimming in a calm sea. The cold is the greatest drawback. As it causes such intense pain, there's nothing you can do to lessen it."
The first woman to swim across the English Channel was Gertrude Ederle the year before, followed 3 weeks later by fellow American Amelia Gade Corson. They were a huge inspiration for Mercedes. After her own groundbreaking swim, she was so exhausted she had to be carried up the steps by the side of the quay and received loud cheers from both a large crowd and waiting press reporters. Her trainer, George Allen, was quoted in the newspapers as saying,
"In all my life, I've never met anyone, man or woman, with such grit and determination. After 15 hours of swimming in perishing cold water, she asked if we would reach the shore within 3 hours. There were times when we had no idea where we were, but when our small boat was in the rocks, we shouted at her to keep swimming. Moments before her feet touched land, there was a good omen. A land bird came and perched on our boat. It was the crowning point of our hope. For then we knew the end was near."
The British newspaper, The News of the World, gave Mercedes a consolation gift of £500 instead of £1,000. As her swim didn't beat the time set by Gertrude Ederle, it was after this that a rival swimmer, Dr. Dorothy Cochrane Logan, a Harley Street physician, set out to beat Gertrude's time a few days after Mercedes's swim. And she shattered Gertrude's record in 14 hours, 10 minutes. However, this bold attempt by Dr. Logan to beat Gertrude's time turned out to be a hoax, thereby, in many people's eyes, discrediting all those swimmers who had genuinely completed the crossing. Dr. Logan was later found guilty of perjury and fined £100 and 10 guineas. As a result, a mere 14 days after her own successful swim, Mercedes decided to swim the Channel again in order to restore the prestige of British female Channel swimmers. This vindication swim attracted huge attention, and several boats filled with dignitaries, a jazz band, journalists accompanied her. Due to the water being much colder on this attempt, and with Mercedes on the verge of unconsciousness, the swim was abandoned after 10.5 hours. She had resisted many attempts to be pulled out during her swim, but the swim was aborted a mere 8 miles from Dover. After the swim, she said,
"It's a terrible disappointment, just terrible. But I do not think it would be sportsmanlike to go into hysterics or cry because my swim was a failure. I'm just going to bear up and smile to all the world. I did so want to get across, but I'm not in the slightest discouraged."
After the extensive media coverage, Mercedes returned to her flat in Pimlico. She gave up her job as a secretary and made the decision to pursue a full-time sea career, as she called it. A month later, she announced to the press her next major challenge would be to become the first person to swim across the Strait of Gibraltar. A rival English swimmer, Millie Hudson, decided to challenge her to a race. Mercedes was having none of it.
"How could I possibly accept Ms. Hudson's challenge? My own arrangements for the swim are all complete. My course has been mapped out, my contract signed. I could not possibly accept such a challenge in such a late hour. Anyway, my acceptance would make the affair look like a stunt. That's the last thing I desire."
The Fleet Street Press had a field day. Mercedes informed journalists,
"I'm going to swim on behalf of my fund for destitute men and women, not for publicity. That is all."
Millie followed her to Tangier on the same steamship. During a frank discussion in Mercedes' cabin, Millie promised not to challenge her to a race and said she would make her own swim arrangements. And so their friendship was restored. Mercedes settled in Tangier and started preparing for the swim. She said the biggest challenge was not the distance, but the currents, which were amongst the trickiest in the world. After 3 failed attempts, she travelled to Spain to try from the other side. The Guardian newspaper reported,
"Gathered to see her off at midday were the civil, naval and military authorities and almost the whole population of Tarifa. Hundreds of women members of the Rock Sporting Club of Gibraltar were also there. The weather was cold and the sky overcast, but the sea was very calm. She was escorted by a tender and a rowing boat with tea, coffee, Bovril and milk on board, as well as a gramophone to cheer her on her way."
However, the sea and currents changed a mile from Morocco and the swim was abandoned. Her 5th attempt ended in similar disappointment, only 1 mile out. 3 days later, undeterred and with grit and determination, Mercedes made her sixth and finally successful attempt. Again, she was supported by a large crowd and numerous small vessels filled with local dignitaries, and at one point was even joined by a pod of friendly dolphins. She made it into the history books again, and was the first person to swim the Strait of Gibraltar, a mere 9 miles, but she actually covered 24 miles in 12 hours and 50 minutes due to the strong currents where the Atlantic Ocean and the Mediterranean Sea meet. On her return to London, she was mobbed by supporters at Waterloo Station. The Daily Mirror newspaper questioned her accomplishment, asking her,
"Miss Glites, why were there no English witnesses to the swim?"
She riposted,
"There was an Englishman aboard, a 17-year-old boy called Henry Solis, whose father is a proprietor for a wine business. There were no other Englishmen available, but surely, though, the word of 70 Spaniards, including the military governor of Tarifa, is good enough."
Another attempt to undermine her achievement was made by an open water swimmer and trainer, Jabez Wolf, in a letter to the Daily Mail.
"The claim to have swum the Strait of Gibraltar without press representation makes it her second unofficial swim. Perhaps her next unofficial swim will be across the Atlantic."
It's worth noting that Wolf failed to swim the English Channel on 20 occasions. But the last word went to Mercedes.
"None but the malicious can question the swim. I was accompanied by 2 fishing boats and a rowing boat, those in the latter feeding me, playing me a gramophone record and singing. The fact that there was no adult English witness can only, in my opinion, increase the validity of the swim. Because the Spaniards would on no account have given the honour of achievement to Great Britain had there been the slightest doubt regarding the swim."
Challenges were never far from Mercedes' mind. And immediately after her wedding in 1930, she set sail with her husband, bound for Turkey, to be the first woman to swim the Hellespont at its widest point. The strait separates the continents of Europe and Asia and is famous in Greek mythology, and the story of the legendary lovers Hero and Lysander. The young poet Lord Byron, a keen open water swimmer himself, also set out to swim across the Hellespont in 1810, and in a letter to his friend Henry Drury called it the ultimate romantic adventure.
"This morning I swam from Sestus to Abydos. The immediate distance is not above a mile, but the current renders it hazardous, so much so that I doubt whether Leander's conjugal powers must not have been exhausted in his passage to paradise. I attempted it a week ago and failed, owing to the north wind and the wonderful rapidity of the tide. But this morning, being calmer, I succeeded. I plume myself on this achievement more than I could possibly do on any kind of glory, political, poetical, or rhetorical."
And with romance in the air, on the 16th of August, Mercedes became the first woman to swim the Hellespont. 7 miles at its widest point in 2 hours, 55 minutes, and a week later, she swam back again. She later recalled the swim to a journalist in South Africa.
"Swimming the Hellespont was easier than I was led to expect. I crossed from Europe to Asia Minor and again the other way."
On that same honeymoon trip, Mercedes also swam across the Sea of Marmara at Gallipoli. However, she'd mislaid her swimming costume, but undeterred, completed the 7 hours, 20-minute swim in a dress, leaving her stockings and shoes behind on the beach.
Mercedes swimming off into the sunset, ending that dramatisation about her. What a remarkable story, Mikey. The challenges she must have faced as a young person in the 1920s, living independently and raising all that money for those swims. So expensive to swim even now.
Yeah, it really is. I knew that when I attempted my crossing, that I wasn't going to have a chance to pay for it again. So that spurred me on through it, and I only had to pay once.
on many of her swims, she had to try more than once to nail the crossing. So that must have been even more expensive.
Yeah, remarkable grit and determination.
Mercedes continued her sea career with swims in the Antipodes, South Africa, and several swims around the British Isles and Ireland. She was the first person to make an attempt to swim the North Channel. She also performed many exhibition swims, the longest of these being 47 hours long. All these swims pulled massive crowds and made her extremely famous.
To understand more about Mercedes's life and legacy, we spoke to Andrew Pember, her grandson, about his grandmother and the book his mother has written. Vicky started by asking him how well he knew his grandmother.
I knew her pretty well, yeah. I was around 14 years old, I think, when she died. So I did know her as a teenager. And particularly, I spent a lot of time with her when I was younger because, unfortunately, she suffered quite a lot of ill health in the second half of her life. And my mum, Doloranda, was her primary carer, basically, ever since my mother was a child. She looked after my grandmother. So we used to visit a lot, you know, at least two or three times a week and, you know, help out with housework.
But none of your family knew about your grandmother's swimming achievements until after she died, when you found a box in the attic.
Well, yeah, that's not quite right. So we knew the basics. So we knew she'd been a swimmer. We knew of several of the big swims. What we didn't know was the extent of her fame, really, and the, you know, the volume of swims that she did. So yes, when she died, there was a lot of archive material. There were logbooks of all of the swims that she did, but also a lot of publicity materials, including film footage, stills, and so on. And there's an absolutely massive amount of it.
And so that's what inspired your mum to write the book?
In reviewing all of that material, I think for my mum, it just would have dawned on her how big an achievement her mother had and the legacy and how important it was that the story was told, because my grandmother didn't want people to know about really what she'd done. And there were stories of her, you know, being spotted by neighbours, "Oh, you're Mercedes Lights," and she would say, no. So, you know, she was naturally a very quiet, introverted, you know, shy woman, I think.
She withdrew from life in public life in 1933. That was around the time that your mother and uncles and aunts were born.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so she I think she came to the end of her swimming career, and she decided that the next phase of her life was around having a family, and that's what she did. And then around that time, her ill health started to happen as well. So she had a couple of things going on. She had arthritis, sort of serious arthritis, you know, but she also had a blood condition. And by the time I was born, she was basically confined to her bedroom. So she was in bed, and led to her being really quite isolated, I would say, in later life.
She was also a philanthropist, wasn't she?
She was.
And she used her money to set up some homes and stuff.
She did, yeah. I mean, it's one of the elements of the legacy, which actually still goes on today. So she wrote about being struck by poverty, basically. And in when she was growing up, she was born in 1900. So, you know, she was in her teens and then 20s in the Depression period. And, you know, families were literally living and dying on the streets at that time. So it was everywhere. And she made quite a bit of money. So the expenses were taken, and the rest went into what became a charitable trust. And she spent quite a chunk of that on building homes for destitute people, so that, you know, to give them somewhere to go. A take on that, I think, was giving just someone or a family a temporary helping hand would set them on the right path, give them a bit of stability, somewhere to live, so that they could get a job and then go and, you know, fund their own lives. And that was the principle that the charity was set up. So she built several homes for families in Leicester. There is still a legacy. So some money from that, from those days, remains. It's under a charity called Family Action now, and it's used for those same purposes still. It's used to ease short-term hardship for families in need. And in fact, during the COVID years, it's been used to support women suffering domestic violence at home.
Especially since the book came out, I think there's been more and more interest about her. The book's also been turned into a film, which was due to be released soon, which is called Vindication Swim. And there's the blue plaque, which was unveiled in Brighton last year. The words on the plaque are pioneer, long-distance swimmer and philanthropist. So what do you think your gran would have made of all of that?
She was a very quiet, you know, humble kind of person. You know, she would have struggled, I think, in these days of, you know, frankly, self-promotion, you know, and social media and, you know, keeping yourself in the public eye. I think she would have struggled. I, however, am really pleased about it. I think she was such an incredible icon that she shouldn't be forgotten. I think the things that she did back in the 20s and 30s are amazing, even by today's standards, particularly given the context, particularly given that there was the science wasn't there, the support wasn't there, you know, the funding wasn't there. She did it all on her own. She was a working class young woman on her own in London, having basically escaped from Germany after the First World War. She was, you know, clearly a very determined person. And I saw that in her through her illnesses, because she was in a lot of pain and discomfort for decades, really, in the last half of her life. So incredible fortitude. And that, I think, describes her the best, because the thing about her was that she never gave up.
Thank you very much, Andrew, for talking to us about your grandma, who, we're all utterly in awe of her achievements and everything that she did. And I also wanted for you to give your very best wishes to your mother. So how old is she now?
She was born in December 1934, so coming on 89, yeah.
Wow, what a good age. We're going to actually finish with a clip of her reading from her book.
I have often wondered why it is that, whilst there are thousands of excellent swimmers in the sporting world, there are comparatively few who have the necessary stamina, strength and endurance to take up long-distance swimming. Apart from the ability to swim, I think the main essentials are a strong heart, good lungs and generally a strong and healthy constitution. Another important factor is willpower. The will to endure the cold, to put up with the discomfort of choppy waves, to ignore the sting of jellyfish, to be disconcerned at the nearness of porpoises, dolphins, and even sharks, to bear the pain of aching shoulder, knee, and shin muscles, to remain floating in the water with your arm or leg seized with cramp, and yet continue the swim, to fight for consciousness when an attack of sleepiness threatens to send you to the land of oblivion. And last but not least, to have the courage to say, I want to carry on when asked to give up, although every part of your body may be aching and you have spent endless hours visualising blankets and hot water bottles and been positively longing for a lie down on terra firma.
Dolaranda Pemba, reading from her book In the Wake of Mercedes Glites, published by the History Press and available in all good bookshops. The clip was recorded for the Swimming A Long Way Together project, which we'll be hearing about later.
Delving more into the background of the period and the influence she exerted on her generation, I caught up with Anna Maria Mullally, a passionate swimmer who is a lecturer in media studies at the Technological University of Dublin. She's researching into bathing practices in the early 20th century. Anna Maria, welcome to Swim Out.
Thank you, Vicky. Good to be here.
What impact do you think Mercedes Glites had on swimming at the time she was doing her big swims?
Well, I suppose to contextualise her, it was the interwar years, a time of economic decline in the UK and somewhat politically turbulent, but people were getting on with their lives and women were engaging in athletic pursuits in a way that was unprecedented. So it was quite a change from, I suppose, the Victorian era. And not only were women getting out and about in terms of their athletic pursuits, they were also, of course, working and holding down jobs. So the classical figure, I suppose, of the 1920s is the secretary who had fun at the weekend. But Mercedes was a secretary, but she did lots of interesting things at the weekend that people might have been really surprised at the time. So she impressed so many people by her feats of endurance, by her single-mindedness, by her courage, by her resilience, by her endurance. She had a massive impact at the time. And of course, there was a growing media at the time. There was a constant newspaper publication. There was the emergence of radio, musical entertainment, and Mercedes' exploits were disseminated across a media that was really eager for content. And because of how she looked and because of how she handled herself, she was an ideal, I suppose, person for the media portrayal. She was beautiful. She was young. She wasn't somebody who provoked controversy in any way. She was a married woman, got married quite young, and she didn't conform to the kind of negative stereotype of the 1920s, which was that of the flapper. She was an emancipated woman, but certainly not in the way that was deemed to be somehow negative or misrepresentative of women. She maintained an aura of quiet, calm, respectable determination.
Do you think her influence was broader than simply swimming? Did it help with more fundamental changes for women?
She certainly wasn't a political activist, so she didn't overtly campaign for emancipation. But I think, of course, she was a role model for other women, and she showed the kinds of possibilities that were there for women's athletic achievement. She also demonstrated to onlookers who weren't women what women were capable of. And, you know, she had a medical team with her always. So she had doctors who were there to assist her in case she got cold, but these doctors were also able to testify to what her body could endure. They saw her in great pain. They saw her having to be pulled out of the water. You know, she wouldn't quit swims quite often. She would be forcibly removed from swims. So they were able to see that she was as good as any of the male competitors of the day, and in fact, much better than many of them. I think there were also difficulties around, you know, framing her in the media. So she would have been described, you know, as a typist swimming the channel quite frequently. Newspaper headlines would say things like typist attacks the channel again. And newspaper frames shifted over the period, and they moved away from labeling her as a typist and in some way or another, you know, diminishing her stature by, you know, poking fun at the idea that somebody with such a job would attempt such a feat, because of course the channel was often the preserve of the very well off, and this woman was a self-made woman. She would be described today as an entrepreneur, but back then she was doing all of this herself. She swam the Straits of Gibraltar, negotiated with people in Morocco and in Spain, and in different parts of the world, negotiated with people through different cultures and in different languages with the help of local people. And she had this vast network of contacts across the world, people who were willing to help her to achieve her goals. And that, I think, is an astounding testament to the kind of person that she really was. So seeing somebody like her move across these kind of class boundaries, or in fact disregard them completely, opened up possibilities for people from other classes as well to begin to think about doing the kinds of things that she was doing, or people from all classes, I should say.
What do you see as Mercedes' main legacy?
I think she was a trailblazer, obviously, and I mean, that's almost a cliche at this stage to say about her. I like to think that she was somebody who always carried people from marginalised backgrounds with her. I think in her person, as the child of immigrants and as somebody who's walked from Bavaria up to the north of Germany, determined to swim across the North Sea back to England, she was somebody who, you know, showed this spirit of endurance, but also brought an element of otherness with her into her Englishness and retained that element of otherness, which I think is really, really important. And I'd like to think that people will look at people who are swimming the channel nowadays, or people who are attempting to cross the channel or cross borders anywhere in the world, and think about why it is that people want to cross borders. I would also like to say, of course, that, you know, she's been inducted into the International Swimming Hall of Fame, and that happened in 2014, quite late. Should have happened a lot earlier. She's in the International Marathon Swimming Hall of Fame. So she's properly accredited swimming legend, as it were. She was married to an Irishman. She did endurance swims in Ireland and long distance swims there too, on the West Coast and in the Northeast. And she swam around the coast of Britain. So here we are almost 100 years later, retracing her steps across these two beautiful islands of ours, looking at these wonderful stretches of water that connect us. And again, thinking about her with her border crossings, with her feats of endurance, and with her passion for the sea, which I think we all share.
Thanks to Anna Maria Mullally for those insights. You can find all the links and longer versions of the interviews on our website at swimout.net. After Mercedes' international swims, which made her famous across the globe, she then went on to entertain her fans with exhibition endurance swims in swimming pools to raise money for her charity. She did 27 pool swims. The longest and last was 47 hours in Worthing.
These swims attracted huge crowds, and Mercedes swam and chatted and read the paper while swimming around the pool. This exhibition swim concept is now being repeated with a relay of swimmers emulating her 47-hour swim in her hometown of Brighton, and our next guest is one of the organisers.
Vanessa Dawes is a visual artist and open water swimmer based in Dublin. Both swimming and bodies of water are what fascinate her, and she explores this theme through live events and exhibitions. Her latest work at Sea Lanes, the new open-air pool in Brighton, is part of a series of events, Swimming a Long Way Together, inspired by Mercedes Glides.
Here we are in Brighton. We're actually at the Sea Lanes pool. So Brighton's where Mercedes lived and where the event to celebrate her life is taking place. Vanessa, welcome to Swim Out Podcast.
Hello.
So how did you first hear about Mercedes?
I guess it was back in 2019, after Dolaranda Pemba, Mercedes' daughter, wrote the book about her mother's life and amazing swims. And I think I was thinking about the English Channel myself as a swim and also as a potential art project. So I was doing lots of research and I came across her book, and I think that was the beginning, really.
We've got the little train going past, which is lovely, the little seafront train. So what is it about Mercedes that inspires and excites you?
Well, I guess when I read the book, it was just, like as everyone says, her tenacity, her determination, and in that age, in the 20s and 30s, she was part of a group of women who were kind of breaking down the glass ceiling for sports and women in sports, and just that drive and also the fact her story, she kind of came from more humble beginnings. She didn't have a big sponsorship and just everything. I just thought she was an amazing woman, actually. I'd love to have met her.
Yeah, it would have been amazing to meet her, wouldn't it? So you've been setting up events and doing art inspired by Mercedes. Can you tell us about these events?
Yeah, well, the project's called Swimming a Long Way Together, and I've been working on this now since about 2019 with Rosie Herman, who curates it. We're partners in it, really, and we started applying for funding back in 2019, and that's probably when I discovered the book, and that's when the project changed its direction, thinking more about Mercedes as opposed to the English Channel in general, because that had always been an interest of mine. And I live in Dublin, so we started off in Dublin with a launch along the River Liffey, because I come from a kind of a carnival spectacle background, so I love kind of big paper mache things. And so we had a little parade up in the river up to Temple Bar Gallery, and some synchro swimming outside the gallery and music. And actually, that's what also attracted me to Mercedes, her love of music. And Mercedes would often have a gramophone player in any boat that she'd be taking across any stretch of water. She would have maybe people on the boat, she'd ask them to sing songs. And when she did the endurance swims, where she swam around the pool for hours on end, she would have music and performance. And I like that crossover of the arts and the swimming as well. As music seemed to be such an important part of Mercedes' life, I commissioned Ruth Clinton, an artist in Dublin, who's part of Landless, a four-piece singing harmony group, and she wrote a song called As Easy Stop the Sea. And it's a very long swim, because it's about long-distance swimming. And it's she read Mercedes' book, and she kind of thought about the music that Mercedes was into at the time, and took some quotes from Mercedes and thought of different references and long-distance swimming. It's a beautiful song, has been sung at each of our events, and we are also making a record of it.
It's a long way to go, a long way to go. It's a long way to go, a long way.
Fantastic. So which of the events that you've done, about five events, or is this the fourth of?
We have Dublin, Cork, Galway, Donaghadee, then I had the exhibition in Brighton, and then Dover, and then this. So I guess that.
So which made your heart sing the most?
They kind of all do when I look back at them. At the time, the 2 weeks beforehand, they might not make my heart sing. They make my heart flutter. I have rosy-coloured glasses. I always think them all very fondly. And, yeah, it's always such a mass operation with so many people involved, and each place you kind of fall in love with that particular swimming community you're hanging out with.
You must have some of Mercedes' bravery and persistence to pull off all these events. So what element of the Brighton event is most exciting you at the moment?
I'm a good talker, so I do enjoy just chatting to swimmers and meeting people. And as the event in Brighton, it's quite epic in that it's 47 hours of people coming to the pool and swimming for whether it's half an hour, or 20 minutes to kind of keep a constant relay going. So I'm, you know, emailing and chatting to lots of swimmers, getting that. And also there's 47 hours of performance we're hoping to have on the pool deck, like what Mercedes would have had.
Sounds like it's going to be lovely. I can't wait. Thank you very much, Vanessa.
You're welcome.
We hope you enjoyed our special programme today. What an extraordinary woman. Thanks to Chas Hamilton for adapting the drama, Dolaranda Pember for her advice, actors Aoife Gaston, who played Mercedes, William Ellis, Neil Sleet, Robin Rose and Alex Rose. Also, many thanks to the Swimming A Long Way Together project and the music by Landless, composed for the project, which is playing now.
Although unfathomed land unknown, to me the sea spells home sweet home.
I think it's sad that she never talked about her swimming achievements. Thank goodness for the box in the attic, which led to the book, which celebrates her remarkable achievements and the legacy she left. Next time, Amy and I are discussing more modern record breakers, and we have some fantastic guests, including Andy Donaldson of Seven Oceans fame, plus Sophie Etheridge and Jackie Cobell, discuss how it feels to hold the record for the longest English Channel swim.
The last word today is from Mercedes, and it's taken from a diary entry in 1931.
Sea swimming is a beautiful thing. In fact, an art whose mistress should not be few, but many. For does not the sea and its danger cross the path of thousands? Nay, millions. What could possibly speak more for man's prowess as an athlete than the ability to master us most abundant, most powerful element, water, no matter what its mood?